pequeña aventurera, ¿conoces la estrella más poderosa de Toy Planet?
¡Sí, abuelo! ¡Los Chollo Precios!
¡Exacto! Descuentos directos de hasta el 70% en primeras marcas.
Ya están aquí los Chollo Precios de Toy Planet. Promociones de otra galaxia. Tiendas Toy Planet. La Navidad es la estrella de nuestro planeta.
You know, even Jericho has to infest here and invade the intro, that beautiful song. And I have to hear Jericho's screeching voice ruining the entire thing. But nothing can ruin this review. It is the Holiday Bash episode of Dynamite. That is what we got tonight. They were in D.C. And the one match I was looking forward to above all else, first time ever, Will Ospreay, Darby Allin one-on-one. It did not disappoint. You had everything you could ask for. You had great near falls. You had exciting action. You had Darby Allin trying to kill himself. You had an electric crowd for that was on their feet. Another great Will Ospreay match and a long line of Will Ospreay matches this year. I mean, yeah, I was looking at my list that I've been keeping track of for the year as we're coming up on the end of 2024. And of course, whose name do I see popping up more than anyone else's? Will Ospreay. And I quickly went to my list and I added this to the list. Well, once I narrow the list down, I don't know if it'll make the cut, but I said, I gotta put this on the list tonight. It almost doesn't even matter, honestly, to me what else happened on the show tonight. That right there stole the entire show. Those two guys in the Continental Classic, they had a tremendous match tonight. And the crowd was on their feet for it. It was a lively crowd. You never really know what you're going to get in some of these cities when they go there now. And they're running the smaller venues, which is the smart thing to do. But kudos to that crowd that they had for the show tonight, because they were up for pretty much everything except one part, which we will get into here in just a little bit. The main event, that wasn't even the main event on the show. I mean, it really was, but they didn't close the show with it. They closed the show with the Death Riders, which is dying a death. Very, very difficult to get excited for this storyline. There's nothing fun about it. You know, outside of the fact that Hangman now is involved in the world title picture, I think Hangman is great. I'm a big fan of his current persona, the unhinged Hangman Page. I'm glad he's a part of a major story involving the world championship, and same for Jay White. Makes it a little bit better, but this is still not a good story. So it's hard to really give a damn about it. But we had the classic, can they coexist? Tag team main event here on this Holiday Bash show. Tried and true wrestling storyline as old as time. We had this at Bad Blood with Cody Rhodes and Roman Reigns. We had it tonight with the Death Riders taking on Orange Cassidy and Jay White and Hangman Page. Right, all four men that are involved in the Fatal 4-Way match coming up at World's End, can they coexist? Can the challengers coexist as tag team partners on this show? I'll give you one guess as to what the answer to that question is. Toni Storm was also featured on the show tonight. You know, there's been a lot said about Toni Storm coming out of her return at the end of the show last week. She came back not as timeless Toni Storm. She came back as the punk rocker Toni Storm. Yeah, right? Okay, the old Toni Storm, she came back as. And everybody flipped their shit when Toni Khan announced that she was going to be wrestling her first match back on Rampage, which is a dead show that I believe is over in 2 weeks. And yeah, it sounded weird to me. Like, why would you put the match on there? But to me, it wasn't anything that I was that emotional about. That I was going to lose my mind over it. And then once I saw what they did on Friday and what they did on Saturday with her other match on Collision, it became pretty clear what was going on here. Now there could be no doubt after what we saw with Toni Storm tonight. Toni Storm was also one of the best parts of the show tonight. Not a surprise. That's been the case many times this year on AEW television. But now we have some clarity on exactly what is going on here with her character. Whether or not we are truly done with timeless Toni Storm, the answer is no, we are not. And those matches that she had on TV on Friday night and Saturday night, in the grand scheme, they don't matter. They don't matter because that's not the real return. The real return of Toni Storm is yet to come. So we'll talk about the segment that she did with RJ City tonight and Ricochet. Oh, Ricochet. Ricochet was, he was in multiple segments here on this show tonight. Tony Khan's great idea for Ricochet. Maybe it's Ricochet's idea. But Tony Khan's great idea for Ricochet is to turn him into a geek, which is what Ricochet has now been turned into. This is now what Ricochet is doing on Dynamite. He's coming out, he's making weird animal noises, and he is completely full of himself. He thinks that he is just the greatest thing since sliced bread. His big bald head has gotten even bigger. This is now his new persona on TV, and he just looks like the biggest loser in the world. We'll see if he's a loser when he wrestles Will Ospreay this week, and they're going to have a rematch as part of the Continental Classic. MJF was on the show tonight. He was actually on the show, and he actually did something for a change. Adam Cole was there. We'll talk about it all. This is your AEW Dynamite Holiday Bash Review. It is Wednesday, December 18, 2024. I am the Solemn Monster. Thank you guys for choosing me for your Dynamite coverage here on a Wednesday night as we head into the end of the year. Tis the season. It is Holiday Bash, so you know that Christmas is right around the corner. And there is a Dynamite on Christmas. It is not live. They are taping Dynamite, next week's Dynamite, on Sunday at the Hammerstein Ballroom. So they will be airing a taped show next Wednesday. I will be here for it. I think the Hammerstein Ballroom for AEW television is exactly what they need. I'm surprised it took them this long. I'm glad they're finally going to that venue. It's going to be great. Collision's going to be there on Saturday as well. Ring of Honor has a show on Friday night. They have their final battle show, which, by the way, is being headlined not by Chris Jericho defending the ROH title against Matt Cardona, but at least according to Athena, it is being main evented by Athena and Billy Starks for the Ring of Honor Women's World Championship. Is this finally the end? Are we finally looking at the end of Athena's record-setting run, the longest reigning champion of any kind in the history of Ring of Honor? Could this be it? Will her reign come to an end at Hammerstein on Friday night? And if so, does that mean that in 2025, we're finally going to get an upgrade for Athena from Ring of Honor to AEW television? Probably not, if the rumors are to be believed that ROH is getting a TV deal soon. She may be stuck in ROH purgatory for a little while longer, but it does give me some hope that maybe she'll be on her way up. Hit that subscribe button and hit the like button as well. If we hit our goal for tonight, which is right around 400 likes on this video, we will do Be the Booker. We have a goal going as well for anyone who wants to drop any orange super chats tonight. See how many of those we could collect. But let's get into this here, because the show opened with Renee Young. I still call her Renee Young. I guess Renee Paquette. She'll always be Renee Young to me. Renee was in the back to do an interview with Orange Cassidy and Jay White, who were in the main event tonight, and asked them if they were focused on the Death Riders or focused on the World's End four-way for the AEW Championship. Jay White said that his focus is on the world title, but he knows that he knows what he needs to do, he says, to make it to the pay-per-view. So tonight, he has no choice but to rely on Orange Cassidy. He said he's not stupid enough to rely on Hangman Page. And wouldn't you know, as soon as you mentioned Hangman's name, who showed up? Hangman Adam Page. And Hangman only had one message. He said, look, Jon Moxley is not yours. And he looked at Cassidy and said, he's not yours. He's mine tonight. And he took his leave. They were in a smaller venue. I don't know what the capacity was. I think they had a little under 3,000, somewhere between 2,500 and 3,000 people in the building. There was hardly any space at all from where the tunnels ended to where the ring was. So this was a different setup than usual. They usually have like a small stage, and then there's a ramp down to the ring. There was no ramp. There was no stage. You come out of the tunnels, and the ring is about 10, 12 feet in front of you. So it's a little bit different than what we're normally used to seeing. And we could actually see the people. We could see them. They were well lit because there were actual people right there on the hard camera. So it was nice. It wasn't so dark. And this was a lively, vocal crowd. Yeah, maybe they're not pulling in 5,000, 6,000, 7,000 people for their weekly shows like they used to do, which was very easy for them to do back in the day. They're not doing that anymore. They're doing it for the pay-per-views. They don't seem to have a problem pulling in 6, 7, 10,000 people for a pay-per-view. They just did it for Full Gear. Probably do it for World's End. But for the weekly shows, if they're pulling 2,500 people, 3,000 people, yeah, it's sad, but you got to run the smaller venues. Acoustically, visually, it's going to sound better. It's going to look better. Tonight was a perfect example of that. I thought it was a great atmosphere for the show. Actually, on that note, I saw part of NXT this week. They were in Lowell. And apparently they didn't do great either in Lowell on the NXT end as far as tickets. But that venue, too, I thought it looked good for NXT on Tuesday night. I like the look of it. You know, it's not a huge venue. It's obviously bigger than the PC. So, like, running these smaller venues is not a bad thing. Obviously, it's a bad sign that AEW can't fill bigger buildings for Dynamite week to week. That's a problem. But this is something they should have been doing months ago. So I'm glad that they finally got to it. But they kicked off the show in-ring with the TBS Championship match. Mercedes Moné defending her title against Anna Jay. Mercedes, for those who don't know, is going to be working her very first Tokyo Dome match. When she made her debut in New Japan, it was at the Tokyo Dome, but it was not in a match. This will be her first in-ring match in the Dome, and she was talking about it the other day. She got very emotional, as she usually does, and talking about how important that is to her and what a huge moment it is. She's going to be wrestling Mina Shirakawa. They're going to be having a double title match, not for the TBS title. So, I mean, it's not like the match tonight was a spoiler, right? She's defending this title in a few weeks. Of course, she's not going to lose. No, she was not going to lose, but her New Japan Strong women's title is on the line. Mina has a championship of her own. She is currently the RevPro British women's champion. She'll be putting her belt on the line. So a double title match at Wrestle Dynasty on January 5th. That is where Mercedes will be. Here in this match, Anna bridged out of an early pin attempt, missed the lariat, though, and that allowed Mercedes to hit the Three Amigos. Later on, Anna planted Mercedes with a gory bomb, and Mercedes got the ropes. I mean, the very last minute. She was able to grab the ropes for a break to keep the match going. So Anna tried to lock on the Queen Slayer, and she got it. Mercedes, though, bit the arm to free herself. And then Anna tried to go back to it. Mercedes locked in the statement maker. Anna used her legs to free herself. Mercedes wanted the Moné maker. Anna ran her into the corner, though, and then Mercedes recovered with a sunset bomb, double knees in the corner, and hit the Moné maker for the win. And when the match was over, they cut to the back and they show Chris Statlander was watching on a giant screen. Still paying attention to what Mercedes is doing. This was good, but look, Anna Jay is screwed. Anna Jay is screwed because not that long ago, she had a program last month with Mariah May. I think it was a three-match program. And in the end, she lost to Mariah May with the provision that she can never again challenge for the Women's World Championship so long as Mariah is the champion, which she is going to be at least until the Australia show in February. So she can't wrestle for the world title anytime soon. Here she was challenging for the TBS title, and she got beat fair and square. So now I don't know where she goes from here. I mean, I suppose she could feud with any number of women that are also doing nothing at the moment, and I don't see where that's going to really do a whole lot for Anna Jay, but at least in terms of her character on TV and having a goal and something to fight for, she's got nothing now. I don't know where she goes from here because she has no titles that she can challenge for unless she wants to challenge for a championship outside of AEW. Then she can bring it to Dynamite and defend it on TV. Like we've seen plenty of other people defend titles from other companies on AEW television, so why not Anna Jay? She did spend some time in Japan. Right? Maybe she'll go back there, win a title, and bring it back. Probably better off. I don't know what else they're going to have her doing after this. But very interesting, they're sticking with Chris Statlander, so I wonder if that means we're getting a rematch at World's End, if that's the destination. between Mercedes and Statlander? Or is Mercedes not wrestling on that show at all? If they do a rematch, because I wasn't expecting they were going to go back to this. Mercedes and Statlander, they killed it at Full Gear. They had a tremendous match. The best match easily of Mercedes' run so far, and the best match of Statlander's run in AEW as well. That's how good it was. I don't have any issue running that match back, but if you're going to do it a second time, I would think that this time Statlander goes over. If it's me, I would put the TBS title on Chris Statlander. They're going to do it at World's End, though. Do they beat Mercedes right before her big double title match at the Dome? They could do it because her TBS title is not on the line. It's not impacted by this. So they could do it. I would do it. But I don't know if World's End is where that match is going to take place. If they've announced that, I didn't see anything announced tonight. But if they're going to do that match again, I think Statlander should be your new TBS champion. We got a taped promo from one of the homes of either Dax or Cash. It was FTR. They were in one of their houses in North Carolina. And they were recovering from the attack that took place on Collision, if you missed any of this stuff, and I'm sure some of you did, where they were kidnapped and they were attacked by the Death Riders. So let's recap what happened here, if you haven't been following the Collision stuff. Basically, a couple weeks ago, the Death Riders tried to murder Orange Cassidy. They tried to poison him with a toxic chemical. Drain cleaner, whatever kind of cleaner it was. It's not meant to be ingested. And they tried to pour it down his throat, basically like what they did at Full Gear. FTR happened to be there. So they, like good Samaritans, they stepped in and intervened to try to save this man from certain death or getting his stomach pumped. And they saved him. Well, the Death Riders didn't like this very much. So this past week, they ambushed FTR as they were on their way out of the building. They put, I think it was bags over their heads. They abducted them. They took them outside the building in the freezing cold, beat the shit out of them, and left them laying in the cold to die. As they said here in this promo. And Cash said, look, we were attacked over nothing. They may not agree with their methods, but they do agree with the Death Riders that some people on the AEW roster need to be open to change. And there are certain changes that need to take place here in this company. I guess they just don't agree with abducting and trying to murder people. Harwood said that Doc Samson won't clear them for the rest of the year. January 1st, though, they will be cleared, and they are going to be in Asheville, North Carolina, for the New Year's Day Fight for the Fallen episode of Dynamite, which I'm not going to put this on the same level as Raw on Netflix and the way that's being built up. But for AEW, this is a big deal because that's the first night that Dynamite will be simulcast on Max. So you'll be able to watch the show on TBS like you do every week, but you could also stream it on Max if you want to. And for them, this is something Tony Khan has been waiting a very long time for. So it's going to be a big night for them, and they said they're going to be there, and they're going to face the Death Riders, and they will not be there alone. I mean, they don't even have to say it. We know who it's going to be. We know that it's going to be the return of Adam Copeland. Adam Copeland and FTR, right? They're all friends. Copeland's another one who lives in North Carolina. I think he lives, they're practically neighbors. Copeland's been gone long enough. I think he's about ready to come back, so we're going to get Adam Copeland back on the New Year's episode of Dynamite, and I guess maybe roping him into this Death Riders story. You know, one of the issues for the longest time is that it was lacking any major names. You can only see the team of Top Flight and Leo Rush and Action Jackson or whatever, Action Andretti, whatever, and the Dark Order and all these people getting their asses handed to them before, finally we saw Jay White get involved and we see Hangman Page getting involved. They get Copeland involved. That's another big name. So Copeland is going to be there and I guess FTR looking for revenge after being left for dead out in the cold last week. There you go. MJF. Finally, we get him in the flesh doing something on this show. He was there last week. He did nothing. And it really is. Like, you could have had somebody in an MJF mask show up last week, and it would have had the same effect. So at least this week, we heard from him. He spoke. He came out to the ring in his Hanukkah jacket. I've got to get me one of those, by the way. I don't know where he got this one. Any tip, I'd love to know. Probably the same. I think he's had this jacket on before. But, you know, look, Hanukkah falls late this year. It starts on Christmas night. It's the first night of Hanukkah. It's like Chrismica. Comes out in his Hanukkah jacket. He said it's the most wonderful holiday of the year coming up, Hanukkah. And if you don't celebrate Hanukkah, well, Santa Claus isn't real. Sorry. Hanukkah is all about giving, and he's feeling very philanthropic. And he would like to talk about a fundraiser that he has started. Now, he thought he was going to get very emotional here. He thought he might start crying. And he had them play some very melancholy music as he began to speak. He put drops. He turned his back and he put drops in his eyes to make it look like he was crying. He says, picture this. There's a small child sitting across from you, starving. It needs nourishment. It needs food. And he had them put a picture up on the Tron of Adam Cole. Man, I wish I had pulled the picture. Puts a picture up on the screen of Adam Cole. And I will tell you, at first, I wasn't sure if it was, I thought it was a real photo. Looking at it. And it's a very skinny man. Clearly, you know, Adam Cole's face on this person's body, this distorted body here. But I'd be lying if I said that upon first glance, I didn't think initially it was a legitimate photo. And then I kind of squinted and I stared at it and I said, oh, okay. All right, because you could have fooled me. Adam Cole, you know, relatively speaking, Adam Cole is a very small man. He's not the biggest man on the roster. And I had to do a double take there before I realized that there was some editing going on there. But he said, if you want to help this freakishly small yellow baby, just scan the QR code on your screen so that you can buy the World's End pay-per-view on December 28th. And if you buy that pay-per-view, a part of your money will go towards his foundation to help put that small yellow child out of his misery. And for that, you can thank him later. Adam Cole does look very jaundiced, although he has laid off the tanner. I will say that. It was very, very bad there for a while. And I said, somebody needs to have an intervention with this man. And somebody did, thankfully. So he's not quite as jaundiced as he used to be. But yes, if you would like to donate to the Adam Cole Fund, you may do so. So then Adam Cole appeared on the big screen live, looking a little less malnourished. He said that he knows how much MJF wants that Dynamite Diamond ring. And he had a meeting with Tony Khan. He's going to make sure that if Max wants to grab that ring during their match, he's going to have two people at ringside to make sure that doesn't happen. And at that moment, Matt Taven and Mike Bennett walked in behind Adam Cole and got literally zero reaction. Nothing. Like, normally, somebody walks into camera frame, you hear cheers, you hear boos, you hear like a, oh, right? Nothing. Nothing. They may as well. Like John Cena walked in, right? You can't fucking see these two guys. No reaction at all. He called MJF a dead man and said that he would finally finish it at World's End. From your lips to God's ears, let it be so, please. So he was about to walk off, and then Cole said, well, you know, I can't remember, there was one more thing I wanted to say, and at that point, we see in the ring, Adam Cole is standing behind MJF. Obviously, the promo was pre-taped. He's still looking up at the screen. MJF has no idea. And Cole, in the video, says that if he's kicking his ass yet, that's what he wanted to know. Am I kicking your ass yet? And MJF had no idea what he was talking about. He played confused. He turns around, and then Adam Cole meets him with a right hand. Takes him down. Cole laid him out with a super kick and then set him up for a Panama Sunrise. MJF, though, bailed out of the ring. So what I got out of this segment here is that Matt Taven and Mike Bennett are totally turning on Adam Cole at World's End. I mean, to me, they could not have telegraphed it anymore. That's number one. Number two, based on the crowd reaction here, I'm not sure that any single person in that building in Orlando is going to give a single solitary shit when it actually happens. Nobody cares. The issue is Adam Cole and MJF. Nobody cares about Kyle O'Reilly being involved in this. Nobody really cared about Roderick Strong being involved in it. I mean, they used it as a way to put more heat on MJF. These are friends of Cole's. Like, I get why they did it. Nobody cares about all these miscellaneous parts and people that have really nothing to do with the core story here, which is about two men, MJF and Adam Cole, and that's it. And so let's say Taven and Bennett do turn on Adam Cole, right? Again, who cares? If Kyle O'Reilly gets involved in the match and ends up costing Adam Cole a win over MJF, which would be stupid if that happened, but let's say it does, nobody cares. This has to end between these two men. Is Wardlow going to show up? Very possible. Yes. Yes, I could see him showing up and costing Adam Cole. And not just the connection that used to be between MJF and Wardlow, but the last time we saw Wardlow, Adam Cole was basically bitching him out and telling him, look, you had one job, you squandered it, and now you just got to make sure that we don't lose our other titles, which, by the way, he failed at that too, and then we haven't seen him since. Whether he's been injured, whatever the case may be, do I think there's a very good chance that we see him pop up at World's End? I do. Because he has been a part of this story in the past, so they could easily bring him back and just reinsert him into this. But at least we're finally going to get a resolution to this, and I hope that World's End is the end of this between these two. And we can move on, MJF can move on to something else, because, man, this is just not going in the direction that AEW had originally hoped that it would go. It was completely derailed by those injuries last year. I think Adam Cole would have been the AEW world champion, and it didn't work out that way. Fate intervened. They got hurt. Fucked everything up. Now they're trying to run it back and just kind of end it, give it an ending, and kind of wrap everything up, and I can appreciate that. But I really do hope World's End is the end of this. Cole, he's going to move on to probably something with his friends, but MJF more so needs to move on to something better than this. Now, Excalibur on commentary talked about Kenny Omega's road to recovery. About time. We have not heard Kenny Omega mentioned on Dynamite here ever since we heard he was going to be wrestling again for the first time in over a year. You think that would be breaking news on AEW television, but this is the first time they brought it up on TV. Mentioned his match at Wrestle Dynasty against Gabe Kidd. I mean, he's only their top star, you know, coming back, so. Hey, by the way, Kenny Omega, everybody. Kenny Omega's coming back. So they aired a little highlights video for Kenny Omega, and it ended with the Omega symbol. You know, they're going to be in North Carolina for that New Year's Day episode of Dynamite on January 1st. It would be an appropriate place for Kenny Omega to make a special appearance, right? That first big show simulcast on Max. I just don't know if he's already in Japan. If he's already in Japan, it doesn't make sense for him to fly all the way back here to basically wave to everybody and then get back on a plane and fly 15 hours to Japan for Wrestle Dynasty. So I don't know logistically if he's going to be able to be on that show, but he really should be. I mean, that January 1st show is going to be a big one for Tony Khan. Wrestle Dynasty is January 5th. So, I mean, if you wanted him on that show, he could be there. We have Christian Cage and Nick Wayne taking on Hook and Katsuyori Shibata. Wayne handled most of this. Christian was basically playing chicken shit heel, playing the coward. Every time Hook got inside, he wanted no part of Hook, even though he had a cast on his arm. Cage continued to play that role as Nick Wayne basically got fed to Hook. He applied red rum. Wayne backed him into the ropes, and with the referee's back turn, Christian wrenched at the injured hand, and that put Nick Wayne in control during the commercial break. Hook eventually made a comeback. He made a hot tag to Shibata. Mother Wayne was just an absolute wreck on the outside of the ring as she watched Shibata just chop the shit out of her son. Shibata sank in the cross arm breaker. Wayne got the ropes. Christian tried to sneak in with a kill switch. Shibata, though, hit a DDT. Hook was stalking Christian at ringside, and he took out Kip Sabian in the process. Back inside, Wayne wanted Wayne's World, but he jumped right into the rear naked choke. And Shibata hit the PK on Nick Wayne. But then Mother Wayne took the referee. That allowed Christian Cage to sneak in and hit a kill switch on Shibata. And then Nick Wayne made the cover to win it for the Patriarchy. Very basic match here. Again, the story was that Christian is afraid of Hook and did not want Hook to get his hooks into him. So he tried to avoid him as much as possible. But it gives the Patriarchy a win before Hook just starts running through these guys. Yeah, he's going to run through them probably one by one until he gets his hands on Christian's. That's the idea here, but basic stuff. I don't really care about any of this. Christian still has that contract for a world championship match. We don't know when he's going to attempt to cash it in. Maybe World's End. It's just sort of, it's still hanging out there. That one little, you know, piece of the story that still is unresolved. What's he going to do? It's like Tiffany Stratton. How many times has Tiffany Stratton on SmackDown teased cashing in her Money in the Bank, and we're still waiting for that? I think they're waiting for Netflix. That's what I think they're waiting for. They aired a video package for Chris Jericho, the King of New York. And here I thought I was the King of New York. Showing him walking around various places in New York City, he had his Ring of Honor World title with him over his shoulder. He was all over the city, including the piss-soaked sidewalks of Broadway, Times Square. He was taking pictures with the Marvel characters, man. These people are brutal. Have you ever been to Times Square, especially during the holiday season? First of all, don't. It's just a fucking mess. But you got Spider-Man out there and the Hulk. And right, if you're a tourist and you don't know any better, you come to New York City, oh my God, Spider-Man is here. We have to go take a picture with Spider-Man. I hope you don't have a cute wife or a cute girlfriend because she's probably going to get touched inappropriately by Spider-Man and his spidey webs. These people don't care, man. I mean, they'll put their hands all over you. If you don't give them money, oh, take a picture with you. Sure, all right, now pony up. Oh, well, I don't have any money, really. Spider-Man will kick your ass and leave you laying on the sidewalk. Like, these people are brutal. They harass people all the time. See, when I was still working in the city and I would find myself in that area, I would try to avoid. It's like a general, like, it's like a box. Last time I was there in that area, like, they had, literally, it was like tape on the ground. And, like, they're not allowed to go beyond certain borders. It's like they're trapped inside this one area. They're contained. But they don't care. I mean, they just walk around. That's right, Spider-Man. You think I'm kidding? This is not Peter Parker here. I don't know who's in that costume, but when you're in costume, you don't know what these people are capable of doing. So anyway, Times Square was one place where he was. Radio City Music Hall. They showed him ice skating. He had the Ring of Honor World title still with him. He was ice skating by Rockefeller Center. And hit all the tourist spots. So then they showed him buying a soft pretzel from one of the sidewalk carts. Great stuff. Great stuff. Used to love those pretzels, but $4 for a pretzel, you can go fuck yourself, okay? So he's eating a pretzel. Then he's in one of the pizzerias. He's having some pizza. When I used to be able to have pizza, man, oh, doesn't matter where you go. In New York, you're going to get at least good pizza, if not great pizza. Like, some people have their places that they go. At least it's not Chicago. Okay, you want real pizza, you come to New York. Even Chris Jericho knows that. So he's having his slice of pizza there. Anyway, this is all to promote his Ring of Honor World title defense on Friday night at the Manhattan Center, Hammerstein Ballroom, against Matt Cardona. Now, they also aired another video package here for Bandido. Last couple weeks, they've had these cinematic-type vignettes with him, like in the Old West. Remember, last week, he got off the horse and he kicked a couple of cowboys' asses. Like, I really like the way they did those. This was not that. This was more highlights from, you know, his previous run before he got hurt in AEW. Very happy that he is finally on his way back. Still no mention, though, of when we are actually going to see him in the ring. Harley Cameron did the Shop AEW holiday commercial. She was playing guitar and singing her own rendition of the 12 Days of Christmas, reciting different items that you can find on Shop AEW. And I just talked about Harley Cameron on TNT last night. I put her over because some of the recent work that I've seen of hers, but not even just the recent stuff, she's very talented. You know, she, and when I say that, it's not just her wrestling. You know, she can wrestle, and she's made improvements from where she was at the very beginning. But she could wrestle, she could sing, and there's another quality that she has that up until the other day I wasn't even aware of. She is a ventriloquist, believe it or not. She has a cameo. And she did a video the other day where she was promoting that she'll do special holiday messages for anybody who wants her to do a holiday message. And she had her ventriloquist puppet, and she was doing a ventriloquist act. And I said, my God, is there anything this woman can't do? She's multi-talented. So I'd like to see more of Harley Cameron. I know, you know, she might be on Rampage and Collision and stuff, but hopefully we get to see more of her even on Dynamite in the future. She's very talented. So I had to put her over last night, and then boom, there she is in the commercial here, singing a song. Maybe it's the accent. The accent gets me. I do like Harley Cameron. With Earl the Puppet? I don't know about... is that what she's calling it? Does it have a name? So backstage... Speaking of talented, we have Mariah May asking why Thunder Rosa wanted to become a wrestler when she was a social worker. Was it to make her family proud? She says a hero is just a dreamer who hasn't realized that they're dreaming. Mariah isn't a hero. She spent her entire career looking out for herself, which has worked out pretty well for her, she said. If Mariah was here 4 years ago, Thunder Rosa would have never even been hired. She then accepts Rosa's challenge to a Tijuana street fight and tells Rosa to bring her father. She would love to end two generations of their family in one night. She questioned if failure runs in the family and says that she won't bring her own father to World's End because she doesn't want him to see what she will do to Rosa. Well, we already saw what she did to her mother at Wembley. She smacked the shit out of her own mother, so there's no telling what she would do to her father. Probably kick him in the nuts. That was a hell of a slap, too. I remember when that happened, talking about it during the review. I said, man, she really laced into her mom, too. In the ring, Tony Schiavone welcomes Rick O'Shea. And Ricochet comes down to the ring. This was ahead of his Continental Classic match with Will Ospreay coming up on Collision this Saturday, which they couldn't even give a time for when Collision is going to start. There's some college sports playing. It's basically whenever the college sports games are over. So, I mean, whatever the numbers would normally be, they're going to be even worse because we don't even know exactly when Collision is going to be airing on Saturday. And Saturday, Collision is taking place at the Hammerstein Ballroom. So that should be a fun show. I mean, Will Ospreay against Ricochet at the Hammerstein Ballroom. You know, that's something worth going out of your way to see. But as far as exactly what time it's going to air, we don't know. So Schiavone brings up the change of demeanor that we have seen recently in Ricochet. In his last match, and Ricochet said, yeah, but... didn't it look good on him? Like, he's trying to be cool now. Yo, he's trying to be the cool guy. Even though he still has people on social media constantly tweeting him going, you bald? Why you bald? That's still the running joke with him. Why you bald? So, he was acting very full of himself. Before he could say anything else, though, the Hurt Syndicate made their way to the ring. Ricochet said they all look good. He's sucking up to the Hurt Syndicate. Hey, you guys look good. He asked MVP if they saw how he beat Commander and how he beat Brody King in the Continental Classic, and said that after tonight, maybe Shelton Benjamin could win 6 points, and then maybe they could face each other in the finals. And MVP, he said, yeah. He didn't look terribly impressed by anything that Ricochet was saying here. And he asked Ricochet, he goes, that business card that I gave you, can you take it out and show it to me? So Ricochet pulls out the card, and at that point, Bobby Lashley grabs him by the throat, and MVP grabs the card, and he rips it up, and he tells Ricochet that no one likes a kiss ass. So basically, his offer is revoked, his offer of membership into the Hurt Syndicate. Ricochet looked like he was about to shit his pants, and he collected himself, and he walked away. He said he'll talk to them later. So the announcers, they were talking about how, well, you know, he did the right thing by walking away because he was outnumbered. My God, did he look like the biggest geek in the world when he walked out of the ring after this segment was over? And look, I guess that's the point, because this is the character now that he is portraying. This is the side of his personality that they have him portraying on TV, where he thinks that he is God's gift. And he's the greatest wrestler, he's the greatest this, the greatest that, the greatest influencer in the business, and nobody can do what he does, and he's the man. And it's all gone to his head. It's like the comments that he made, whatever that podcast was that he was on last week. I didn't talk about this, but he had made comments on this show about how without Ricochet, there would be no AEW. He said, you know, all the matches that he had many years ago against people like Kenny Omega and Pac, it created a world in which AEW was allowed to exist. Part of what led to AEW becoming AEW. Because of Ricochet. And I read these comments and I was kind of floored when I first read them. And I just want to believe so badly that they were said in character, that they were said as part of this new persona that he is playing on television, because nobody could be that delusional, I would think. So I'm just going to assume that it is part of this new Ricochet that we're seeing on TV, because the delusion was strong with that comment. Oh, yes, indeed. Yes, it was. And we were not done yet with Ricochet. We were not done with him yet. But before we get to more Ricochet, we had a Continental Classic match here. I think this was a Blue League match, I do believe. Shelton Benjamin stayed out there for the next match because it was Shelton Benjamin one-on-one against the Beast Mortos. I have to mention this. He wrestled Okada on Collision, and Okada called, he goes, Beast Mortos? He goes, no. Bitch Mortos. Now, I mean, the bitch thing, I know, is kind of like with Okada at this point, it's just like, okay, is this what we've reduced him to? But that was fucking funny. Okay. When he was like, as soon as he said bitch Mortos, like it should have been obvious like that. Okay. That's a gimme line for him, but like, I didn't see it coming. And so when he said it, I cracked up laughing. Like in that situation, it worked perfectly. So yes, it was Shelton Benjamin and the bitch Mortos here. MVP stayed out there on commentary and mentioned that Shelton had a minor procedure recently on his knee, playing up the possibility that maybe, you know, he could lose, but not that he was saying Shelton was going to lose, but just planting the idea like, oh, he may not be at 100% here. And that's why Mortos was going after the knee. In the end, it didn't make a difference anyway. They had a good match. Mortos came into this with 0 points. He came out of this with 0 points. Mortos hit the top rope twisting senton for a close two count, and he wanted a spinning backbreaker. Benjamin countered into a power slam for the double down. Rolling German suplexes followed by Benjamin, multiple step-up knees in the corner, and then Benjamin hits the T-bone suplex for the win, which MVP called the Hurt Fall. After the match was over, Lashley and MVP, they returned to the ring. Lashley beat down the bitch Mortos until MVP told Benjamin to take him for a ride with more Germans. Suplex City. MVP said that this is what Daniel Garcia has to look forward to on Collision. And then Garcia's music hits. And the TNT champion walks out. He says he's not stupid. He knows what's going to happen to him if he goes to the ring. MVP agreed and said that you would be stupid, but Garcia said he doesn't care. Mark Briscoe then comes out and joins, and the Hurt Syndicate still have the numbers advantage. MVP cracks Briscoe with his cane. Lashley flattens Garcia with a spine buster. Benjamin wiped out Briscoe with a thrust kick. MVP then handed Benjamin the TNT title, and he held it up over Garcia's body. Even though they're supposed to be the heels, and they just laid out Mark Briscoe, who everybody likes, right? Everybody likes Mark Briscoe. And they laid out Daniel Garcia, the babyface champion. The people still cheered these men because they're cool. This is what the Hurt Business was in WWE. The only difference is at that time we didn't have fans. But they came out and they were dressed to the nines and they were the cool ones. You know, they come out in those nice custom-made suits. And the Hurt Syndicate has that same quality about them. There's just something about Bobby Lashley in particular that people just don't want to boo. They just think this guy's a badass and they just want to cheer for him. But, you know, Shelton Benjamin is no slouch either. This run that Benjamin has been on has been tremendous. He only came into the company in October, so it's been 2 months, right? Not a long time. In these 2 months, though, he has yet to have a bad match. He's been going out there on television every single week, and he's been having great match after great match after great match. This one was no different. Another very good match here. Their use of Shelton Benjamin so far, their portrayal of Shelton Benjamin so far, is to be applauded. I don't know if it's going to last, but so far, I love what they've done with him. And I know he probably won't, but he should beat Daniel Garcia in this tournament. That way they can set up a TNT championship match between them coming out of it. It's like the G1 where you would have, you know, let's say the champion gets pinned. Right, we've seen the IWGP champion be pinned in the G1 before, and it means something. Usually the person who would pin the champion eventually ends up getting a title match out of it. So that's what I would like to see. I would love to see Shelton Benjamin as the TNT champion. It's probably even less of a chance of that happening, but that's what I would like to see. He's been doing great. He gets older, and you would never know it just by looking at him and watching him in the ring. He's been tremendous so far. Renee was backstage with Ricochet. So we got two Ricochet segments on the show. Let me just say this about Ricochet. I'm not going to sit here and complain about the fact that Ricochet got two segments on this show. Because if I did, I know there are people that would say, oh, well, look at these fickle fans, right? Ricochet comes to AEW and he's actually getting multiple segments and people bitch. But if he wasn't being booked, people would bitch. That's true. So for Ricochet, he's getting television time. One thing that is not Ricochet's forte are promos. He's just not very good at them. His forte is ding, ding, ding and going in there and being Ricochet. So this was the second time now on this show where we had a Ricochet promo. Okay, that's not necessarily a good thing. He said he doesn't know, he was with Renee, he doesn't know what that was all about out there with the Hurt Syndicate since they gave him their business card in the first place. He said, but that's besides the point. He has 6 points in the Continental Classic, and this Saturday he steps into the ring with one of the reasons he came to AEW in the first place, which is Will Ospreay. He didn't come here just for Ospreay, though. He came to AEW to shut people up. And that's why he's going to have his eyes on his next match, or the next match coming up here, which is a Continental Classic match. And then Ricochet ended with his weird bird noise again. Ha-ha! So he did his weird bird noise and was about to walk away. When he turned around, though, he walked into Swerve Strickland and Prince Nana. And Strickland called him a turd and used his shoot name. He called him Trevor. saying he hoped he would have changed after the 14 years of knowing him, but he's still the same old Trevor, a follower. And that's not going to work here in AEW. Ricochet said he wondered how long it would take to hear the Swerve's House stuff, and he brought up Strickland failing to win the Continental Classic last year. Yes, Lyra Valkyria is Bird Girl, and I think we may have just found Bird Boy. It's too bad he left WWE. It's like Ghostbusters, where we had the Gatekeeper and the Keymaster, and you have to bring them together. But now they work for separate promotions, so I don't know what we're going to do here. Yes, we're going to call him Bird Boy. Either Bird Boy or Bird Brain from now on. I think either one works. But he told Swerve that he failed to win the Continental Classic last year. He is going to win it this year. And then he did the noise again. Ha-ha! And then he walked away. And Swerve laughed and said, that's why he's still bald. Maybe he's trying to be an eagle, and he's a bald eagle. I just realized maybe that's what he's supposed to be. Maybe that's what he said, but we got an eagle back on WWE television, right? We got the winged eagle back. Now we have a bald eagle here on AEW television. You know, he does sound like a bird. I mean, I'm not just making that up. I mean, that's what the fucking guy sounds like. I don't know if that's what an eagle sounds like, but... Oh, man. Ha-ha! We got highlights of Toni Storm's return at the end of Dynamite last week when she came out after the match between Mariah May and Mina Shirakawa. So now this week we had a special segment called Toni Storm, Portrait of a Rockstar. And it was RJ City. He was sitting in a hotel room somewhere and he brings in Toni Storm, who is her old self, rocker Toni Storm. She shakes his hand and she says that it's so nice to meet him, like they've never met before. She says that it's always been about the grind on the indies. So she can't believe she's finally made it to AEW. And RJ brings up Tony being a 3-time AEW world champion. And Tony says, well, it's a little too early to be aiming that high. I mean, she just became All Elite just the other day. But maybe one day she'll be that 3-time champion. So she puts over, because RJ says, well, I'm going to rattle off some names here. And he brings up Saraya. And Tony says, legend. It's debatable. Mercedes Moné. And she says, icon. Mariah May. And she stops and she says, best in the business today. And then RJ asks, well, what about timeless Toni Storm? And Storm said, no, that's wrong. It's Toni time. You got to get it right. And then she made RJ throw up the rock on devil horns. And then she hugged him and she left. This woman is fantastic. This is great. This is great stuff. And all the people who were bitching and moaning and pissing and making a big stink about the Rampage thing last week. Again, this is building to the return of Toni Storm. This is not the Toni Storm that is going to challenge Mariah May for the AEW Women's World Championship. Mariah May is going to beat Thunder Rosa at World's End. They're going to play this out for another month, month and a half. We're going to get the return of the Timeless One. They're going to go to Australia. It will no longer be in a stadium, unfortunately, but they're going to probably have about 10 to 12,000 people in a smaller venue there. And we're going to get the rematch between Toni Storm and Mariah May at Grand Slam. That is where this is headed. And this woman, her portrayal of this character, now, of course, she has amnesia. She doesn't remember any of her previous run in the company. And, you know, it's just the thing about Toni Storm is when she's on TV, she is going to be one of the most entertaining parts of the show every single time. She is one of the most consistent performers in this company all year long. And just when I thought they had played this out, they couldn't do anything more with the Timeless gimmick. She had taken it as far as she possibly could. She proves me wrong, puts a different spin on it, and she's back at it again. I think this is great. The other thing, I mentioned this on TNT last night. I laughed at the Okada thing on Collision when he called him the bitch Mortos, and I laughed at this too. Tony was in the back after her win, and she was geeking out. She was being interviewed by somebody off camera that we couldn't see. And she was talking about how, oh my God, since I was a little 10-year-old girl, I've dreamt of this moment, and finally I'm here, and I'm all elite. And she looks over, and off camera, and the camera pans over, and she spots in the hallway, all the way down the hallway, is Mark Briscoe. Oh, Mark Briscoe, and she's waving, I'm Tony Storm. And the camera pans over, and all you see off in the distance is Mark Briscoe standing there with the biggest, just what the fuck, look on his face that you have ever seen. He doesn't say a word. He's just standing there frozen, like, I can't believe what I'm seeing right now. And then they slowly pan back to Tony. It was the funniest fucking thing. So I'm loving this. It is one of the highlights of these shows for me. And hopefully it will continue on for many more weeks to come. But that wasn't even the highlight of the show. The highlight of the show came next. Because we had one more match tonight. In the Continental Classic, this was a Gold League match between Will Ospreay and Darby Allin. First time ever. Two of the biggest baby faces in the entire company. Two men who very well may be, both of them next year, the AEW World Heavyweight Champion. Without question, at minimum, one of them will become the AEW World Champion, but I think both of them are going to get their run next year. We immediately get chants of holy shit from the crowd before they've even touched, before the match even really begins. People in the building are loud, they're on their feet, they're cheering, they're excited, and they're chanting holy shit. Then we get dueling chants for Ospreay and for Darby. Darby got a drop kick and a corner charge. As he was scaling the ropes, though, Ospreay leveled him clear to the floor. Crowd's on their feet. Ospreay missed the slingshot dive. Darby was there for a charging low dive, where we've seen him do this many times, like a bullet, just rockets right out of the ring. But they end up back in the ring, and Ospreay, he rolls to the apron. And Darby goes up to the top rope, and he's going to go for a coffin drop. Now, the first time I ever saw Darby Allin, I didn't see Darby in you know, MLW or any of these other promotions. I know of Darby from AEW. And my earliest memory of Darby in the ring is against Cody Rhodes. This would have been June of 2020, I guess. And he went for that coffin drop on the apron, and Cody moved out of the way, and he just smacked the apron. And I thought, oh, little did I know, right, the kind of punishment that this guy would take. But I said, oh, God, that it just, it looked awful. It sounded terrible for him. And we've seen him take countless just sickening bumps since then. We've seen him do that bump a few more times since then, too. So he goes for it again. You know he's not going to hit it because he almost never does. But there was something a little bit different about this one. Ospreay rolls out of the way as Darby comes flying off the top rope. He didn't just land on the apron and then fall to the floor. He smashed into the apron, like back spine first, shoulder blade first. It made such a disturbing, haunting sound. And then he immediately just crashed to the floor outside. It was awful. Just awful. I mean, hey, it looked like it was the most devastating thing in the world. But it just sounded awful. And I just look at this and I go, you know, he doesn't care about his body. We know this already. He doesn't care. He doesn't care. He wants to go out there and have fun. And he wants to go out there and it's a rush of adrenaline for him. And he wants to put on a show for the people. And that's why he does what he does. And I'm sure that for some of these bumps, he knows how to kind of move his body in such a way to try to absorb the impact in the right way and minimize the damage. You would think anyway, at this point, he kind of sort of knows what he's doing when it comes to some of these bumps. But he doesn't care. And we know that Tony Khan is never going to rein him in. Tony Khan loves this shit. He's probably sitting in the back geeking out right now. Darby, Darby. Like, he's probably marking out like every fan is in the back. Nobody is going to rein this guy in. Nobody is going to tell him no. So he's going to continue to do stupid shit like this. And one of these days, he's not going to get up. Thankfully, today was not that day. But you talk about career shortening bumps. Like, you hear wrestlers in interviews, and I've heard Steve Austin talk about this. Like, everyone's got their bump card, right? How does Darby have any left on his card? His card is full. You only get one card. His card is completely full. And how old is he? He's got to be early 30s. He's not that old. What is he going to feel like when he turns 40? It's insane to think about. Absolutely sickening bump. We come back from commercial. Darby has somehow recovered just enough to hit a desperation springing coffin splash. These two men trade some wild counters. A wild sequence of counters here led to a Darby float over stunner. Darby goes up top. Again, he gets cut off. Ospreay hits the cheeky Nando's kick. Now he goes up top, ends up rolling through a leap of faith attempt. Darby tried a code red, but Ospreay flipped him back over onto his feet, right into a hidden blade. Like, as soon as Darby lands on his feet, and then boom, he wipes him out with the hidden blade. But instead of going for the pin, he goes immediately into a Stormbreaker attempt. Darby this time, though, flips into a picture-perfect code red for the closest of near falls. This was a tremendous sequence. It was so good they replayed the entire thing. And it was great. And the fans were hanging on to everything, every little move, every little near fall here from this point forward. The crowd was so into it. But it was just a very exciting sequence here. And now things are kind of kicking into the next gear. Both men start slugging it out. Chops, forearms. Allen would not go down. He spun into a La Mahistral cradle for a two count. Ospreay sprung up for an Os cutter, but Darby sidestepped into a springboard coffin drop for two. They climbed the ropes. Darby wanted a superplex on the outside. Ospreay held on. He kicked out Darby's legs. Followed that with a Styles clash, which actually looked totally safe compared to that fucking coffin drop on the apron. But still looked great. Hit a Styles clash from the apron to the floor. And upon landing, Ospreay begins to sell his knee. Rolls back into the ring. He's going to opt for a count out. He'll take the count out win over Darby here. Crouch chanting, "You killed Darby." And I'm thinking, you killed Darby? No, Darby killed himself. Don't put this on Will Ospreay after what this guy did 5 minutes ago. Don't give me any of that "you killed Darby" shit. That kills himself every time he goes in the ring. Every time he goes in the ring and has a match, he shaves 5 more years off of his career. So by my math, he's going to be retired in the next 5 years. It's just insane. So Darby broke the count at 9, rolled right into an Os cutter, though, for a near fall. Ospreay wanted the Stormbreaker. Darby spun out, landed on his feet in perfect position for the Scorpion Death Drop. So then he limps to the corner. He heads up the ropes, hits a coffin drop right across the back of Will Ospreay. And now he's crawling back to the corner. He goes back up top, hits a normal coffin drop. And then he covers Will Ospreay and he gets the pin to put the exclamation point on the best match of the entire tournament so far. Darby Allin wins 3 points over Will Ospreay here in the Continental Classic, one of the best TV matches all year. I feared that we were going to get a time limit draw to kind of protect both guys. I was very happy that we didn't. This is Darby's biggest win since, at the very least, his 20-minute match he had with Hangman Page over the summer on Dynamite. But honestly, for being realistic here, This was Darby Allin's biggest win, singles, tag, or otherwise, since the retirement match for Sting at Revolution. It's been a while since Darby won what felt like a really big match. And this felt like a really big match because Will Ospreay has been largely protected and is one of the biggest stars in the company and is going to be AEW World Champion next year at some point. We know this. So for Darby to get a clean pinfall win over him in the middle of the ring after a fucking great match like this, that's a big deal. And it's a win that Darby needed because clearly they're positioning him to eventually challenge Jon Moxley for the world title. And if they're going to do that and possibly even put the belt on Darby, let's get the belt on him before he climbs that fucking mountain, which he's still talking about doing in April, right? April's not that far away. If they're building to Moxley against Darby, then these are the kinds of matches, these are the kinds of wins he's going to need on the road to eventually getting Jon Moxley back in the ring. So Darby was still celebrating his victory when the Death Riders made their entrance, including Claudio Castagnoli. The Death Riders were coming out for the main event. Claudio was with them, and there was a stare down between him and Darby ahead of their tournament match that's coming up. Claudio beat Darby last month, not in the Continental Classic, but he beat him. So this should be, I would think this would be a win for Darby when they meet this time around. And they did indeed close the show with Jon Moxley, Pac, and Wheeler Yuta taking on Orange Cassidy, Switchblade Jay White, and Hangman Adam Page, who has a great moveset, by the way. Page and White, they bickered before the opening bell. Page was going to start the match, but he walked back to his corner and he messed with Jay White by tagging in Orange Cassidy instead. Moxley caught Cassidy with a shot to the throat when Cassidy was out at ringside. Cassidy now is crawling to his corner. Jay White and Hangman Page, they're putting their hands out. White ends up pulling up the hand, so Page gets the tag. And he was stalking Moxley before coming face-to-face with Marina Shafir. That gave Wheeler Yuta an opportunity to attack Page from behind. Back in the ring, Page drilled Yuta with a lariat, and he tossed Yuta into the corner, and he called for Moxley to tag in. Remember what he said earlier in the show? He wants Jon Moxley. That's it. Nobody else gets him. I don't care about anybody else. I want Jon Moxley. So he wants him to tag into the match. White, meanwhile, though, blind-tagged Page, which just pissed off Hangman Page, who decides to exit the ring and leave. And he heads to the back, which now makes this a 3-on-2 handicap match, taking us into the picture-in-picture break. So White managed to battle back on his own. Cassidy was still down. Claudio ran distraction that allowed Pac to hit a bounce-back German suplex. Moxley made the tag. White flattened him with a cutthroat suplex before falling back into an Orange Cassidy tag. And he spiked Moxley with a DDT. Later on, Cassidy wanted the orange punch. Moxley dodged it into a cutter. All of a sudden, guess who's back? Hangman Adam Page. He's had a change of heart. And he sprints back down to the ring. Wanted a buckshot lariat, but on Moxley. But Cassidy drops Moxley with an orange punch. And this does not sit well with Hangman Page. Wheeler Yuta was in. He ate a Stun Dog Millionaire. And just as it looked like Page wanted a buckshot lariat on Orange Cassidy, he ducked, and Page wiped out Yuta with it. So was he aiming for Orange Cassidy, or was his intent to take out Wheeler Yuta? Right? That's the question that they left you with. Pac was in. White took him out with a Blade Runner. He and Page starts arguing. And Orange Cassidy is going over to join them when Jon Moxley sneaks up from behind, and he steals the pin on Orange Cassidy with a schoolboy. And the Death Riders win the match. He pins Orange Cassidy, and the announcers point out on commentary that no one to blame here but themselves for what happened here at the end of this match. And so, to bring it back to the opening minutes of this review and the question I asked at the beginning, can they coexist? The answer is, in fact, no, they cannot coexist. They did not coexist here on this show. The answer is no. And if they want to have any shot at winning the world championship at World's End, they're going to need to get their act together. They're going to have to get their shit together, basically, is what the announcers were saying. But look, at World's End, it's every man for himself. It's not like it's everybody against Jon Moxley here. Like, these guys, give me a break. These guys don't give a shit about AEW. Hangman wants to be champion. He doesn't give a fuck about AEW. Jay White, he wants to be the champion. He doesn't care about AEW. Orange Cassidy claims to care about AEW, but he really doesn't. He just wants the championship. It's all about the title. It's going to be every man for himself. So there may be more bickering and there's going to be more distrust. Are we supposed to believe that all three of these men are going to work together to take out Jon Moxley? It's never going to happen. After the match, White and Cassidy, they all kept arguing. Paige was there. Until the Death Riders surrounded them with chairs, so they put their arguing aside briefly and they fought them off, except Moxley, who bailed into the crowd with Marina Shafir. And Yuta, Claudio, and Pat got their asses kicked to close out the show. Yeah, the thing about this build-up here to the four-way, I think the four-way itself has the potential to be, you know, one of the best pay-per-view matches they've done all year. You look at the talent involved, and absolutely, they could go out there and potentially steal the show. The logic, though, you know, going into it, we had the issue here with the challengers all bickering with each other, right? And we're probably going to see more of that on the 28th. We're going to see the exact same thing. They want you to think that Jon Moxley, my God, his title is in such jeopardy here, but you're going to see the same thing where, yeah, they're going to be pulling each other off, pinfall attempts, they're going to be arguing with each other, and it's a four-way match, so there's no disqualifications, so you know we're going to have the Death Riders running amok, Shafir and Claudio and Pac and Yuta, they're all going to be involved. So is Jon Moxley really at a disadvantage? I mean, they're trying to sell us on that, but is he really? No, he's not. So it's a little bit of flawed logic there. And also, I just don't think anybody believes that Jon Moxley is losing that title. He's not. He's not. The match itself, though, I think should be very good. The Continental Classic. Here's where things stand right now. We'll talk about the Gold League here. We have a four-way tie at the moment atop the leaderboard. 6 points each for Claudio, Will Ospreay, Ricochet, and Darby Allin. So that's the way things look like at the top. Brody King has 3 points. And Commander, 0 points. Now we shift over to the Blue League. Kyle Fletcher has 9 points. Kazuchika Okada has 7. Mark Briscoe and Shelton Benjamin each have 6. Daniel Garcia has 4. And the bitch, Mortos, 0 points. You'll notice, I love how Tony Khan, we heard so much about how Tony Khan wants to make Lucha Libre and some of their lucha talents a priority because this Fox Sports Mexico deal that they signed, right? Hologram was going to be a big deal until Hologram got hurt. So he puts the Beast Mortos in this tournament. Even though the Beast Mortos lost, he was one of the losers in a four-way match on the pre-show at Full Gear, the match that Buddy Matthews won. Why Buddy Matthews should have been in this tournament. The Beast Mortos, though, we need him represented in this tournament. You'll notice how the Beast Mortos and Commander are the only two guys that have 0 points so far. They have nothing in this tournament. Not that the Commander thing is surprising. Commander was a replacement for Juice Robinson, and Juice Robinson wasn't going to win anything either. But I just love how both of the lucha talents in this tournament have a combined 0 points. Rampage. I believe this Rampage coming up on Friday night is the penultimate episode of Rampage. So I think after this we have one more and that's it. I think the show is canceled. But on Rampage we're going to get Commander. Well, I'll just do predictions. I mean, we have Brody King and Commander, okay? The idea that Commander coming into this with 0 points is going to beat Brody King, like if he does, it'll be the biggest fucking joke in the world. So Brody King is going to beat Commander on Friday. Collision is the Christmas Collision episode from the Hammerstein Ballroom, and there's a bunch of tournament matches. Will Ospreay against Ricochet. I'm going Will Ospreay on this. can't imagine Will Ospreay's losing back-to-back to Darby and to Ricochet. Daniel Garcia takes on Shelton Benjamin. This is one of those things where what I want to predict is different than what I want. But you know what? Fuck it. Shelton Benjamin ought to win here. And I'm hoping he does. I think he should. I'm going with Shelton in this match. Darby Allin takes on Claudio Castagnoli. I'm going with Darby to get his win back on Claudio from last month. Mark Briscoe takes on the bitch Mortos as well. You know what? I think Mortos is going to get a win. Mark Briscoe already has more points than he did last year. He got one win last year. Now he's got 6 points. I'm going to go with Mortos to beat Mark Briscoe. And Adam Cole and MJF are going to have a face-to-face on Collision. I don't know what else they could talk about at this point. What's left for them to talk about? I don't know. I feel like they've peaked. That's it. Just do the match and get it over with already. I don't know what else they could do. Dynamite next week is going to be a taped Christmas show, also from the Hammerstein Ballroom. They're taping it on Sunday. We have Okada taking on Shelton Benjamin in the Continental Classic. That is going to be very good, and I am going with Okada for the win. Kyle Fletcher takes on Daniel Garcia. I'm going Kyle Fletcher. Ricochet takes on Darby Allin. I'm going to go Darby. Claudio takes on Commander. Going to go Claudio. And Will Ospreay against Brody King. And for that one, I'm going Will Ospreay. Still thinking Ospreay and Fletcher is the direction that we're headed in here. The rematch from Full Gear. I enjoyed the episode tonight. It was not... I don't want to sit here and say that everything on the show was great. It was not. I felt like it was more of the same with the Adam Cole stuff, where whatever he's doing is just coming off very flat. I mean, I got a kick out of the MJF portion of the segment before Cole popped up. I thought the TBS title match was good. You know, it was fine. The Continental Classic matches are what really delivered tonight. The Tony Storm segment I thought was great. The main event, I didn't really care, honestly. It's hard for me to bring myself to care about the Death Rider stuff right now. So I can't really say that I had much fun with the main event, but there was a lot to like on the show tonight, and I love the enthusiasm of the people in the building. You know, they packed it in pretty well. It was a smaller venue, and we could just tell it was a smaller building, but this is what they're going to have to do. And if we get more crowds like this, then I think it's going to help a lot with these shows. You know, because nobody wants to watch a show that's in half darkness and the people sound like they're sitting on their hands and they're just not excited to be there. You need that enthusiasm. You're going to see it. You're going to see it this weekend. They're doing a little residency at the Hammerstein Ballroom 3 nights in a row. And you're going to see exactly what I'm talking about. Crowd engagement, crowd enthusiasm in the building. Like, it makes all the difference in the world. This weekend's going to be a perfect illustration of that. So I enjoyed the show tonight. Let's take a look at the Twitter poll. What did you think of Dynamite? We have thumbs up 46%, 25% thumbs in the middle, and then 28% thumbs down. So if you combine the up and the middle, then that will put you up around 70%, and then you get 28% thumbs down. So make of that what you will. But that is your Holiday Bash episode of Dynamite. All right, let's take a look at your super chats here. Hope you guys are having a great night. I hope you guys also checked out all the other content on the channel, all the videos that have gone up recently, the Raw review from the other night. There will be no SmackDown review this Friday. Just be aware of that. We have House of Glory, so that is where I'll be. I heard Jericho mention Jamaica Queens in his promo segment tonight. That's where I'll be on Friday night. I'll be in Jamaica Queens. So if you're going to be at the show, be sure to say hi. Got to give a shout out to the one and only Fire Panda before I went live tonight, who came in with a $50 super chat. Oh my God. Fire Panda, lighten it up. You love to see it. Fire Panda, thank you very much. I appreciate you. Happy holidays. Please, God, never let Darby take a burning hammer or a vertebraker. He's taken far worse. How bad could it be? We saw him fall down, basically threw himself down a flight of stairs outside at Daly's place. You want to start going through the list of bumps he's taken that are far worse than a burning hammer? I think his spine is basically made of jelly at this point, so I'm not really sure it would make a difference. Brother Fluff Salisbury, people are ragging on Toni Storm's current gimmick, but a woman who only hears what she wants to hear may be the most realistic character ever. That is probably one of the most accurate super chats that we've gotten in a while. You're gonna get me into some trouble here. You know that, Fluff, right? You're gonna get me in some trouble here, and I'm gonna blame you. I'm gonna point the finger at you. That's what I'm gonna do. Jerome Eugenio, I know this isn't news, but Toni Storm is amazing. Yes, she is. She's great. She's fantastic. Jerome Eugenio, thank you. Justin G with the 12. So many trees on this road. So little time. Ruined my intro earlier with that fucking learning tree. Justin also is a channel member. Thank you for re-upping for 21 months. Probably won't get to do many more. Got to fork over $8,000 for mold remediation. My friend caused me and my neighbor. Oh, that sucks. That's not much of a friend. Why don't you get the friend to pay for it? If the friend caused it, let the friend pay for it. It is amazing, though. You know, I hear from friends who are going through home renovations or some home repairs. Like, it's amazing when, you know, they buy the home and they know there's going to be some minor repairs, but it's like you buy it and then this breaks. Oh, the water heater breaks. Oh, we need a new HVAC. The roof is leaking. That's $15,000 right there. It's never ending. Mold is bad, though. Like, you gotta take care of that. Definitely got to stay on top of that. Thank you, brother. Groovy Goose. Do you like the movie Casino? Do you like Martin Scorsese's films? Thanks for the reviews, Mr. Monster. I love Scorsese. Casino is fantastic. I love Goodfellas. I love Casino. And I love when Scorsese, his mother shows up in Goodfellas. Apparently that entire scene was ad-libbed by her. One of the best scenes in the whole movie. I'm just gonna borrow this knife. You know, we hit a deer and we gotta cut the parts off. It got the paw. What do you call the paw? The hoof. It's the hoof. Every time De Niro says the hoof, I don't know why, I just start laughing. What do you call that? What do you call the paw? The hoof. Yeah, we gotta cut the hoof. We'll bring it back. Don't worry about it. El Masse, Ricochet's caw-caw needs to become a super chat. Caw-caw! It really doesn't, though. It really doesn't. Lars. Is this Lars Sullivan? I hope not. I'll be in the building in Orlando for World's End. I promise I won't care about the Kingdom or Matt Taven. You better not. You be quiet when they come out. I need to prove a point here. Jazz Jackrabbit. I haven't heard from Jazz in a while. You recently spoke of Tito and my favorite team when I began watching, Strike Force. Great look, great worker. Surprised they only lasted 2 years. Yeah, I mean, Strike Force was a good team. I remember when they won the titles and everybody went crazy in the crowd. Maximum Alex with the 1999. Do you think that it would have been better to reveal Wardlow instead of these two guys that nobody cares about, or do you save him as the person who makes the surprise save for Cole and sets up a new program between him and MJF? I mean, You're talking about this like Wardlow is going to show up and help Adam Cole. I'm thinking that if Wardlow shows up, he may end up helping MJF, whether, you know, he's in on it with MJF or he just hates Adam Cole so much that he's going to help MJF indirectly. So you and I are thinking on two totally different wavelengths here. Lady B. With the $10 super chat. My mom group don't let kids watch AEW. Santa's Not Real promo is one of the reasons why. I'm curious about AEW's target demographic. Are they making any efforts to appeal to younger viewers? I don't think they're making any efforts to appeal to any viewers beyond hardcore diehard wrestling fans. So if you like the the banger matches and all that, then that's who they're appealing to. That's what the whole Continental Classic is meant to appeal to. That's their target audience. That's always been their target audience, and it's always going to be their target audience. And the thing is, that audience, it's a finite audience. It's a niche audience. It's only so big. I don't really see them making inroads with any particular demographic. What demographic are they making inroads with? Tell me. Tell me who you think they're making inroads with. The numbers tell a different story. Let's start with Lars first. Lars says WWE is running a house show in Orlando with the larger arena the same night as World's End. Do you think this affects World's End, and doesn't it say something about the GCW AEW politics? I don't see how WWE says anything about GCW AEW politics. I don't think it's going to hurt them in a major way. This has been known for.
I love you, Solo.
This has been.
You are my tribal chief.
Thank you, Wolfman. This has been known for a while. It's not like it snuck up on them, and it's a house show. I know WWE is hot. They'll probably sell more tickets than AEW will. But do I see it making a big difference or making a huge dent? I don't. I think they'll be fine. They'll have a good audience. Their pay-per-views, they usually have a pretty good number of people in the building. I don't know what the capacity is of the building they're running offhand. I don't have it in front of me, but I think they'll do fine. Dan Richards. I've been watching wrestling for almost 50 years. Never seen a geek gimmick get anyone over. Wrestlers need to add out clauses to their contracts if they are not being used. Icing anyone is immoral and it is petty. Well, I mean, certainly in this case, you know, we're talking about people like Ricky Starks and Rey Fénix. It's definitely petty. It's definitely petty. And yeah, a geek gimmick. Unless you're trying to get somebody over as like a geeky heel, which I think is the idea with Ricochet here. But yeah, that's not going to really get him over in the way that I think he wants to get himself over. But they have their story they're telling with him, and I guess he's all full of himself, and that's what they're going for. Jeremy Rose, Ricochet is now Rico Kiss. Rico Kiss? Am I missing something? Is it because he kisses ass? Is that why? Trill Mexican. Yo Solo, that laugh that Ricochet is imitating is from New York rapper Jadakiss. Not sure if you know who or what a Jadakiss is, but yeah, that's his laugh. I didn't know that was his thing, so okay. I have a friend who's done that for years, and it just annoys the shit out of me. I just thought he was being a dick. I did not know that was Jadakiss's thing. Can't imagine how he was able to make money with it. Bender McSimpson, the issue with the Death Rider story is that Moxley would be cryptic and say, you don't know what's really going on, and this is above you, but nothing ever came of it, and it didn't go anywhere. That's bingo. Yeah, He was being very vague and very cryptic at the beginning, and it's like they pivoted to a totally different direction. I wonder if Shane McMahon was coming in and then he changed his mind. I'm wondering if Shane just kind of looked at the lay of the land and was like, you know what? Remember he put that statement out? He admitted that he had that meeting with Tony Khan. I wonder if he was thinking about coming in and then had a change of heart. BCOM, see clearly, Tony Storm is all elite. Yes, finally. Tony Storm going to get that big push. I can't wait. Oofman Entertainment, how can one not love Tony Storm? How, I ask you? How? I don't know. I love Tony Storm. You're asking the wrong person. Arabian Night, Darby's got to pick and choose his crazy spots, and not just on random TV. In comparison, Jeff Hardy, another daredevil, did a lot of his reckless spots on pay-per-view. Yeah, but I wouldn't condone some of the shit that he did either. But yeah, you definitely want to pick and choose. But he felt like first match with Will Ospreay, so for him, I'm sure this was a big deal. And it was a huge win for him. It's not even like he couldn't do something like a big spot. Like, why that? Why that? And he's serious about wanting that. He wants to climb this mountain in April. And he broke his foot this year and he couldn't do it. And you would think that he would play it a little safe because he's going to be getting ready in the next couple of months to climb this mountain that kills hundreds, maybe not hundreds, but it kills a lot of people every single year. Like, it's a serious deal. You got to be healthy. You got to be as close to 100% as you can be. You would think, okay, I don't want to miss it this year. I missed it, you know, previously, and it's now or never. And so I don't want to do anything too stupid, right? I mean, you could always get hurt. You can get hurt doing a freaking leapfrog. But like, all right, I'm gonna be smart, and I'm not gonna put myself in a situation where I might get hurt doing something really dumb. But like, no, it doesn't compute in his brain. Like, he just does things. You know, he just does it. He doesn't care. And Tony Khan doesn't care, which is even more amazing to me. Oz and Glorious says, Bliss fan told me that Alexa was returning 8 months ago. Well, I mean, Bliss fan thinks Alexa Bliss is coming back every month for the last, I think, 18 months. So the thing is, like, one of these months, he's going to get it right. And then he'll be able to tell all of you that he was right and you were wrong. Alex with the 25, Brother Solo, what were your thoughts on the Raw on Netflix kickoff show from today? With Logan Paul moving to Raw, are there any specific names you would like for him to have a feud with? He's going to wrestle John Cena. I think that could be a WrestleMania match next year for Cena. I laugh at the people who took him seriously last week on his podcast when he said that he was retired because he's a dad now. Like, give me a fucking break. So, yes, I saw the event. It was whatever. It was kind of boring. The best part of the entire thing was Kevin Owens crashing for the 3 minutes before they escorted him out. And he had the Winged Eagle belt. And he said, he told Michael Cole, look, I even dressed up for you again. He had his tuxedo t-shirt on. But he had the Winged Eagle belt. And he said, I'm going to be December 26th. December 26th, he's going to be in Florida. They have a live event. Actually, December 26th, they have a Madison Square Garden house show. I wonder, is one of them a matinee? Maybe he can make both shows. Someone's got to defend the title if Cody's going to be out. May as well be him. That was the best part of the entire thing. Oz and Glorious says Tony Storm's going to win Rookie of the Year in 2025. She should. Deservedly so. Bliss fan says, I can't wait until Alexa finally returns for so many... Bliss fan, I got to tell you something. For your sake, I hope that when Alexa Bliss returns, she has an incredible run and stays healthy and doesn't get hurt. Because God forbid, if she comes back and then she twists an ankle or something happens, and look what happened to AJ Styles, right, in his first match back. If something happens and she's going to be out of the ring again, I don't think I can take all the Alexa Bliss, you know, messages and all of the just the commiserating, like, all of us are pulling for you and we're pulling for her. I want her to come back and do great things, because I have never met somebody in my life who is as invested in someone as you are with Alexa. It's admirable. It's admirable. It's like that one guy who roots for the team that just loses year after year after year. It's like they're cursed. And then finally the team wins the World Series or they win the Super Bowl. And maybe your team didn't win, but you're happy for that other person. You're happy that finally, after all these years of darkness and dread, that they can finally have their moment in the sun. I'm pulling for you. I'm pulling for you. We're all rooting for you. But if anything happens, if we have to go through all this again, I'm going to lose my mind. Hoffman says, fun fact, Martin Scorsese directed Michael Jackson's Bad music video. Remember music videos? Oh, I remember music videos very well. I miss them. Remember watching Beavis and Butthead whenever they would show all the GWAR music videos? Those were trippy. Devin from New Jersey, buy or sell Black and Gold NXT or early 2020s AEW? I love them both. I love them both. But I'm going to go early 2020s AEW. Oz and Glorious, don't say moveset around corporate money punk. I'll try to remember that. Nightmare LLC, thoughts on Jackie Redmond in WWE. Her and Punk are funny as fuck. I think Jackie's great. She's very talented. She pulls double duty. She works, I think, is it NHL Network? I know she's like a big hockey correspondent, big hockey fan. I think she's great. I've become a big fan of hers. Jeremy Rose, did you hear Kevin Owens troll CM Punk as he was being escorted out saying he has the best moveset? Yes, I did. I'm hoping that there's little breadcrumbs being left for the eventual CM Punk Kevin Owens feud. You know, when he posted that image yesterday on social media of all of the upcoming holiday live events that he's going to be attending, he strategically placed a Christmas tree over CM Punk's face. The signs are all there. Owens and Punk, just on the mic. That could be one of the feuds of the year in 2025, so I hope we get it. I hope we get it. I think I have covered all of your messages now. Thank you guys for the super chats. We are currently at 384 likes, so we fell short of all of the goals tonight. Not good. One of those nights. What can we do? We'll try to do better next time. I will not be live again with you until Monday. So that is going to be the Monday Night Raw review. Of course, before then, we'll have episode 893 of the podcast this weekend. And I am hoping I can do my annual predictions on that show. There's a lot going on. I got to prep for the Hog Show on Friday. That's where I'll be streaming live on Triller. Triller TV, if you want to check the show out. We got the Hardys on that show, Zilla Fa 2, bunch of others, maybe some surprises, you never know. Near says, guess what? We know we are expecting a boy. All right. Congratulations for Near having a bouncing baby boy. Now you just have to let us know what the name is going to be. Congratulations, brother. I'm very happy for you. Mazel tov. And all the best health and happiness heading into the new year. if we don't speak before then. So I see there was a late surge, and we have just crossed the 400 mark for Be the Booker. Why do you do this to me? Why do you do this to me? Always slacking off. All right, let's Be the Booker.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is now time to Be the Booker.
We had a horrible night the other night. So this is going to be the last Be the Booker for almost a week. So we got to make this a good one. We got to make it a good one. We begin with the Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov. Oh my God, I remember WrestleMania 1 when they won those tag team titles from the US Express. You remember when Volkov, man, he would get in the ring, he'd have the microphone, he would salute. I don't know what I'm saying. Get all this heat, man, and he would get attacked from behind. It was a great heat-getting gimmick back then, right? All the American wrestling fans, they all hated the commies. So they used to say on commentary. All right. Nikolai Volkov and the Iron Sheik. Luis, calm down. I can see Luis is very excited for Be the Booker, but we don't need no Be the Booker spam here. So calm down, Luis. Iron Sheik and Nikolai Volkov against Kevin Nash and Scott Hall, the Outsiders. Oh man, Sheiky Baby in there with Kevin Nash, Big Sexy and Sheiky Baby in the ring at the same time. Oh boy. Talk about like a clash of generations. That's what I like. That's what I like the most about that. Okay, so women's Be the Booker. We're going to kick things off with Mother Wayne is praying for you to pick a stip. Look at Mother Wayne here. She's praying for us to pick a stipulation. So don't blame me. Blame Mother Wayne, because that means we got to pick a stipulation now before we do anything else. I don't know what we're going to land on here. I do what Mother Wayne tells me to do. And the stipulation is steel cage. So we're getting a women's steel cage match. Okay, so now we know. We now know. No, it's not Willow. We now know what the stipulation is going to be for this match. Marquand says, what mommy wants, mommy gets. Kairi Sane kicks us off. She is going to be one half of the... Imagine Kairi Sane coming off the top of the cage with the insane elbow. There's the spot. There's the spot right there that they're going to build to in the match. Insane elbow off the top of the cage. That's going to be legendary. Kairi Sane against Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. Well, Britt Baker is taking an insane elbow from Kairi Sane off the top of the cage. Boy, I'd love to know where Britt Baker is right now. Boy, did she disappear after she told Serena Deeb, no one cares about you when you come out. And then from that point forward, Britt Baker disappeared from TV. Isn't that interesting? Isn't that interesting how that works? You know what's going to be fascinating to me one of these days is when Britt Baker and Tessa Blanchard end up having to work together in the same promotion. Oh, I can't wait for those stories. All right, men's Be the Booker. We're two bells so far. We need one more. We need one more to complete the hat trick.
Vader. The man they call Vader. Vader. From the Rocky Mountains, it is Vader time. Love it. Vader, gonna go one-on-one with Pentagon Jr. There he is. Get ready. Get ready, everybody. Zero Fear coming to Netflix January 6th. Are you ready? Are you ready for the return? Penta and Vader. What would that matchup look like? You know, it's funny. There's a lot of people out there who are unaware of the fact that Vader, very late in his life, very late in his career, had a match with Will Ospreay over in the UK. I remember that. I'll bet there's a lot of people who don't, though. Talking about matches that you never would have expected to see. That's one of them. And Luis with the $2 super chat, thank me for getting us to 400 likes. Thank you, Luis. We all thank you. We are all going to be very thankful to Luis right now. Thank you. Thank you, Lord, for Luis. We are all grateful for his presence. Here you go, Luis. Just for you. Just for you, buddy. Luis has told his story.
Fuck your story.
That's a shame. All right. I'm getting out of here. Yes, I will be. I am planning on doing a show next Wednesday. So the Dynamite review should be on as scheduled next Wednesday. That's Christmas night. I don't know what kind of audience we're going to have. Maybe we'll have a bigger audience than normal. I don't know. I hope we'll have a decent audience because I am planning on being here on Christmas night. We'll talk about Dynamite from the Hammerstein Ballroom. But Raw first. Raw first on Monday night. No SmackDown Friday night. Just remember that. Be well, stay safe, have yourselves a great rest of your week and weekend, and check out all the other content here on the channel, all the video clips, and I will see you back here very soon for more Sound Off. Until then.